Good morning, good morning, and welcome to the Chamber Link. I'm Catherine Grinberg, the Executive Vice President at the Chamber, and your host for today's conversation. Today, we're digging into a very timely and impactful topic, which is public policy
yes.
and advocacy.
Yes.
Yes, get excited, everyone. I was thinking it's very near and dear to my heart, and then I was worried listeners would think I was kidding, but I'm serious, as you know. And, you know, we're coming off our recent Moorhead and Detroit Lakes Area Day at the Capitol in St. Paul, where business leaders and community leaders traveled to meet with Minnesota legislators and discuss key issues. So I'm really looking forward to getting the perspective of all those that are in the room today. We'll be talking about that event, what we learned, as well as the why behind our advocacy and the perspective from the perspective of a couple members that we have here with us today. So joining the conversation, I've got Cale Dunwoody, our Vice President of Public Policy at the Chamber, along with two business leaders, Rich Slagle, Regional Director of Community Development for McGough, and Back by Popular Demand, or something like that, John Rewer, President and CEO of Eventide Senior Living. So together we'll talk about the purpose of day at the Capitol, a little bit about some of the actual issues that are being debated right now at Minnesota's legislative session, and why it's important for leaders like everybody at this table to stay involved in the process. Any opening comments from anyone before I jump in?
Let's do it.
Okay, we'll jump right in with a few questions about Moorhead and Detroit Lakes Area Day at the Capitol, since, like I said, we just came off of that last week. Cale, do you want to start by just give us an overview of the day at the Capitol, including what its purpose is, kind of who attended this year, and who did the group meet with while we were there?
Yeah, for sure. Well, the Moorhead and Detroit Lakes Area Day at the Capitol is really a great opportunity for business and community leaders, nonprofit leaders, really anybody from our region to go down to St. Paul and advocate for the priorities of our region. And this year we brought 47 business and community leaders down there to visit with elected officials, agency leaders, executive branch officials, to really, again, dive into some of the major issues that we're talking about here in the Moorhead, Clay County greater community, and just really provide that face-to-face interaction. I think, you know, one of the things that we always talk about is politics is so divisive, and there's a lot of things that are going on. It moves really fast paced. But when you're able to sit down and shake the hand of a legislator and talk about how this really impacts your business, or how this is going to impact your community, or how this flood protection is going to save millions of dollars for taxpayers, it goes a lot further than just sending an email or just sending a text. And I think, again, they see Shannon, myself, our lobbyists out in St. Paul quite a bit. But when we can bring the business voice to St. Paul, especially in that size, they really say, oh, wow, this is something important, and we better listen up. And so we talked with local elected officials. We talked with statewide elected officials on some specific topics, agriculture, you know, flood protection, bonding. I mean, a lot of different things. And so we had a great swath of different topics and speakers. And it's really just a great opportunity, I think, to build relationships. At the end of the day, that's what this is. And so it's a two-day event where we go out to St. Paul and really advocate for our priorities and build relationships.
That's awesome. And like you said, there's nothing like shaking the hand of the legislator, looking them in the eye, and telling them as a business leader your own experiences and what you're seeing here on the ground in the community. Nothing like that that you can get from just an email or a call. So really important for people to show up. You mentioned the number of individuals that went, almost 50 people. This event hasn't been around all that long,
right?
Both, you know, within the tenure of us being at the Chamber. Can you talk a little bit about where this event started, kind of how it's evolved, both in impact, people that are there, as well as you mentioned the Detroit Lakes piece of it?
Yeah, for sure. Well, this is the fourth year of this event. And so we've been, you know, when our president and CEO Shannon Full came in, she really had this idea of how do we continue to elevate our presence in Minnesota. And I know, Catherine, you at the time, you were the public affairs manager at the Chamber. I was a public affairs specialist and really started to build this event out. It started with 8 people 4 years ago. And I'm thinking 3 of those people might have been staff included in that. And so John was out there for the first couple as well. And it's really, you know, really built into this great event where we're able to leverage our connections and our voice that much further, because presence really matters, especially when it comes to St. Paul. We're a small fish in a big pond on the Minnesota side of things. And we know that. And the way that we can, you know, kick out our coverage, or whatever you want to kick our coverage, is by bringing more people out there. And so we've been doing a fantastic job of recruiting folks to come. They're seeing the value. We're actually, you know, to John's credit, he was like, hey, let's explore this a little bit further with DL, because DL and the DL chamber and the Fargo-Moorhead West Fargo chamber have a lot of the same priorities. And again, how can we help leverage those priorities collectively? And so John and others have really encouraged us to lean into this and build this. And so just really grateful for the partnership, for the sponsors. These two individuals both were sponsors of the event, so we couldn't do it without folks like Eventide and McGough Construction, Cardinal IG, and Pro Resources to make this thing happen. And so that's where we started 4 years ago, and we've really built this thing up from, again, eight people all the way up to 47. I've been telling our friends over in North Dakota, hey, we might need to step it up a little bit if we want to compete with Minnesota, because we're kicking, you know, kicking butt over there. So
yeah, we're gonna need a bigger room next year, maybe.
Right.
That's the goal. Well, John, you're getting some credit over here. You were one of the OGs.
It's so overdue. I just need to start, but no.
Talk a little bit about why do you keep coming back? Why do you keep sponsoring it?
Well, the obvious. It starts with value. You know, this event doesn't run on thanks, it turns out, and. And from an Eventide perspective, there's so many of our issues that are covered every day in St. Paul, and not always very well. And so this was an opportunity for us not only to look out for our own self-interest, but as importantly, the community of Moorhead. And I think it often gets overlooked, like most of greater Minnesota, as Cale pointed out. And then what we've learned through those early visits was that, you know, we attract a lot of other legislators outside of our area. So that was really why we started to think bigger about the region has a definite interest. And as we grow that and invite and grow the tent, invite more people to the party, so to speak. And it is fun. I would say that, you know, we use the word party probably carefully because it is work. And the chamber does an outstanding job of having it so organized. There's really not a wasted minute for that, you know, really two half days or a day and a half, whatever we're talking about. And the access that we get with all of the legislators and the interest that they have, I mean, it really is something only that the chamber can pull off. And so while we have lots of affinity groups in the community, we love them all, this is really something that I think only the chamber could have really put together and done in a way that the two of you lead the charge on. I think Shannon's background with Minnesota, you know, because we're so involved, it's obvious that we're so involved in the North Dakota politics and have to be, but I think it's always been an opportunity to how do we fight what we always feel is kind of a losing battle, which is how do we make our voice heard in St. Paul? And the chamber's just done an outstanding job with that, and that's why we find value in it and come back for more and look to grow. So shout out to Barnesville, Hawley, Lake Park, Glendon, Audubon, and Perham, and every point in between and beyond. Our region's important, and I hope you'll join us next year or in coming years for this trip.
That's awesome. Thank you for that, and appreciate you showing up year after year, John, and your leadership, like Cale said, and helping us kind of push this and grow it bigger and bigger. And you talked about, you know, the chamber can pull this off, and I think it's in due to huge part by all the partners that come together. We have private businesses like yourselves, but it's also impressive to have the school system, the county, the city. So we've got public and private entities all in lockstep, which is so cool to see.
I think Rich would agree. You know, I think the unintended consequence was there's so few opportunities for all of these nonprofit, business, governmental leaders from our region to get together and galvanize on not just legislative issues, but just stuff going on. And so that has been, I think, the unintended consequence is that I've built relationships, and having been at Eventide for 23 years, I've built new relationships out of this every year. And so I'd be interested to get Rich's thoughts on it too. So as a sponsor of this, I find great value in it personally, but I know our organization has benefited as a result of these relationships.
That's great. Yeah, Rich, jump into the conversation as a first-time attendee for this one. You've been very involved in our other policy efforts and your policy chair of our policy committee. Can you talk a little bit about your interest in joining this and, like John said, kind of your experience with it?
Sure. I would echo John's comment about just the gathering of these people. If you think about during the course of a year, there are not many situations or events that you could say would bring those kind of people together on a shared mission. And so for me, I was thrilled, first of all, to be part of the group. I will kid that I was the opening act for John, and maybe later on in this show I'll get a chance to do that again. But I would say getting involved with this was really kicked off by being asked to be the policy chair, because it became quite evident in our time down there that it is viewed as Moorhead, Fargo, West Fargo, DL, et cetera, when you're in Minnesota. And sometimes we forget that. And so that was a good reminder for me that Minnesota is as important, you know, to this this community and this group as the Fargo side in West Fargo.
Absolutely. And you make a good point. I think the name changed several times when legislators would introduce us. We became the Moorhead Chamber, the Moorhead Detroit Lakes Chamber, the Moorhead Fargo West Fargo, whatever it needed to be for the day.
I would throw it out there. All of us on the Moorhead side are completely open to a doing business as change if the chamber is ready for that.
No. No, we absolutely, the Minnesota side is so important. And so this highlights that of going down there, having those conversations. And, you know, whether we joke about which name is first on the list, both sides are vitally important to the community. And so I'm glad you brought that point forward as well, Rich. I want to jump into some of the issues that we talked about legislatively, but we're going to take a quick break. So when we come back, be prepared to talk about some of those issues that we talked about down there and that we're working on, Kale. Welcome back to the Chamber Link, where we are discussing public policy and advocacy fresh off of our Moorhead and Detroit Lakes Area Day at the Capitol. Have with me in studio Kale Dunwoody with the Chamber, John Rewer, and Rich Slagle, two of our members that sponsored and attended this event. We want to jump in a little bit more now to the actual legislation that is being discussed down in Minnesota, in St. Paul, for Minnesota's legislative session. Kale, do you want to start by just jumping into kind of where we're at in the Minnesota legislative session, and then what are some of the issues that the chamber is advocating for and working with?
Yeah, most definitely. Well, Minnesota meets every year for session, and it's usually kind of that the January through May timeframe. And so this year they started in February, so it's been about a month into it now, and then they end on May 18th. So it's a very short legislative session. And as we've talked about before on this show, is the Minnesota legislature is very closely divided with a 33-34 in the Senate, and then a 67-67 tie in the House. And so very, very close tie. The one seat in the Senate is a DFL seat. And so the DFL has control of the Senate, and the House is actually working under some joint power. So you're seeing co-chairs, co-vice chairs, all, you know, these equal number on committees. And it's becoming a really challenging time because bipartisanship is not easy. And I think they're starting to really see that in St. Paul, is that bipartisanship is a challenge, and they have to work together to get these things even out of their committee, let alone to the floor for a vote and into the other chamber.
Imagine that, working together. Isn't that quite the idea?
Well, and I think it comes after what people have called the DFL trifecta, where the governor, the Senate, and the House were controlled by the DFL. And mm-hmm. No matter what your political ideology is, you know, that's what the control was, and it's a lot different because they were able to pass things and move things forward, and they really didn't need the minority party and the Republicans or the GOP. Well, now they have to work together, and the Republicans do the same thing. They might have, you know, a trifecta, but they have to then work together after this and come together. And I think that's where the biggest challenge is trying to figure out where are those areas of commonality. Some of the things that we're trying to push, you know, while we have all this background, and I know we'll probably dive into it a little bit more of what the Minnesota session is, a couple things that are major is the budget. The budget is there's a big deficit in the next biennium. So 2027 to 2029, there is a large deficit. But this year there's a large surplus, and so they're having to kind of hold that funding over till the next biennium to pay down that deficit. So there's really not a whole lot of money. There's about $377 million that they could technically spend. In addition to that, this isn't a budget year. They don't have to pass anything. And so there's not really a deadline that's saying you have to pass something. And so there's a lot of headwinds there. There's, you know, some budget challenges in the future. But there's some priorities for the business community that are really important that we're trying to push through. A couple of those are taxes. So the federal side of things, they passed the HR1, the One Big Beautiful Bill, the Family Tax Cuts, or whatever you want to call it. There's about 1,000 different names for it now. Is that the federal government changed some of their tax codes. And Minnesota is not an automatic conformity state like a number of other states. And so what they have to do is they actually have to change their tax code to conform to the federal tax code. There's a number of different things that we were advocating for on the federal level, you know, research and development, bonus depreciation, all these other things that pass on the federal side. Well, now Minnesota's got to correct their books and make sure that it's matches up. Well, that's becoming even more political right now. For instance, there's one that's a pass-through entity tax. It basically, not to get in the weeds too much on tax code, it just helps reduce the tax burden of some of smaller businesses. And now that's being used as a political leverage point, as a bargaining chip, if you will, with some of the folks in the legislature. Again, because that power is really, really, really shared at this point, and they have to find every point of leverage they can. So we're pushing forward on that. We should actually tomorrow be sending out an action alert to our members. So you're getting a sneak peek of reaching out to our elected officials, reaching out to the tax chairs to talk about how important tax conformity is. A couple other things we talked about was sustainable aviation fuel. There's a huge opportunity on the Moorhead side to develop a massive sustainable aviation fuel project. So leaning into that, what levers need to be pulled to make that happen? There's some business mandates that we're talking about with, it's called Stay or Pay. I won't dive too far into that. NDAs, non-disclosure agreements for city officials. I mean, there's a lot of things there. A couple big things that we continue to talk about is bonding. One of the things that is really important is the state continues to pass a bonding bill. And this is where, you know, they already have to work together to get a lot of things done. They have to work together even more so to get a bonding bill passed. A supermajority of each body has to pass this bonding bill. And so one of the big things in there is a flood protection project. We have the diversion on the actual channel itself on the North Dakota side. But in order for that to be certified by FEMA, there's a number of Minnesota projects that have to be completed up to the tune of $64.07 million. And so it's a big ask. And the way we get that done is through a bonding bill. And so continuing to ask for that project, a psychiatric or a non-secure juvenile detention facility. And so a lot of different priorities there. The last one I'll mention is just business mandates overall. And this is where it leans into paid family medical leave, earned sick and safe time, the onerous, you know, mandates the state has continued to put on year after year on our business community, and just making it a little bit less competitive than it was the year before in Minnesota. And I know our businesses are really resilient. They're trying to find the light at the end of the tunnel on these things. But I specifically asked our public policy committee this fall, is paid family medical leave and earned sick and safe time still a priority for us to advocate? And it was a resounding yes. We need you out there. We need the chamber to lead on this, because we don't have a voice out there from our community that's leading on this. And so we need to stay at the tip, as the tip of the spear on this thing. So a lot of things I threw at you, those are a few things that we talked about during our day at the Capitol that mirror up to the chamber's public policy priorities for 2026 in Minnesota.
Thank you for walking through that. That was very helpful. You got any free time these days? Because that list is extensive.
It keeps getting longer, it seems like.
Yeah, but all important stuff that impacts our businesses as well as overall the community, things like flood protection that, you know, it's residents, businesses alike. John, one of the things that Kale just brought up was paid leave and the business mandates kind of overall. Can you talk a little bit, because that was kind of one of the central themes that was in, I think, every meeting that we had down there last week. Yeah. Can you talk about kind of what you heard, where things are at with that?
Well, again, up against this idea of, is it time well spent? Because are we going to make any real change? Is the damage already done? It's just as poorly executed, just as poorly planned, just as ambiguous as we thought it was going to be. Many, many Moorhead businesses work to try to at least talk common sense into our legislative leaders that were behind this. And again, I think the most frustrating part is that in that group of legislative folks, there's very few that actually come from a background of business or managerial skills. So the idea that many of them have never seen a P&L, they've never done a budget, they've never managed people, and now the government overreach that's happening in something like family medical, and by the way, if there's anybody that wants to be on top of recruitment and retention of good people, it's us. And the idea that that the government's here to save the day and it's going to be, you know, enforce all of these mandates that, frankly, in many cases weren't needed, aren't wanted, and now are so poorly planned, and I don't think we know where that number could end up. And that is a real cost, not just to businesses, but to our team members, and ultimately to our customers. And that's every business, and it's, you know, that's not even getting into the, you know, the inequities between now, again, a border city like Moorhead up against Fargo. And so we talk about the amount of businesses, not just in Moorhead, but across Minnesota that are likely going to exit. I mean, these are the kind of things that are going to be not one big exit, but a slow burn on a lot of folks that have other options and are finally at the point in a state as great as Minnesota that we love living in that are forcing our hand into looking at other options.
And that's already started too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's already companies that have been telling us that, hey, we're looking at getting out of here, or yep. we're already moving. And I think those are the stories that we need to bring to St. Paul, because they're real stories, and say, hey, this is what's actually going to happen based off of these priorities. Again, we realize we're not going to change the entire paid family medical leave, and we understand that it's a kind of a crown jewel of the DFL, but can we find some breathing room for these businesses, because they are looking at the bottom line and they're saying the dollars and cents aren't adding up. It's a lot easier over on the North Dakota side than it is the Minnesota side because of these statewide mandates. Let's lean into that and say, hey, can we change some things?
Well, absolutely. And to circle back on that, as we head to a break here, I think, like we talked about at the beginning, a stronger region is when we're all stronger together. So we need the Moorhead side to be strong as well. So when we get back, Rich, I want your take on some of these policy issues as well. Welcome back to the Chamber Link. We are deep into conversation right now about policy issues that are impacting our region, specifically on the Minnesota side. Talked a little bit from Kale's point of view what we're working on at the Chamber for policy priorities, and got a little bit of John's thoughts on some of the business mandates. Rich, I want your opinion, what your takeaway was from talking to the legislators down in St. Paul, what, you know, their comments that you heard, the ideas that are currently being debated. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would add this. I spend almost all my day in relationships of some sort, right? Conversations, meetings. And so one of the things I wanted to see when I went down there was to see how these folks were getting along, how they're working together, hopefully collaboratively. And I, unfortunately, in some cases, didn't see that. And so not to be a bearer of bad news, but I do think we have some work to do, some prayers to offer to our representatives who are trying to work on our behalf, is there's a bit of a gridlock down there. So when we had these opportunities, which again, hats off to the Chamber for setting these up, with these elected leaders, you would hear that things were just sort of happening. Now, they are going to start to speed up, I think, and get out of committee, but often we heard there were discussions on ICE or fraud. That was generally the two main topics, which in some ways are not as pertinent to our area, but I want to couch that by saying I've attended now the last three Moorhead City Council meetings, and there's been a strong effort to have the city post a response and, in essence, a policy towards ICE. And so we'll have to see where that goes. But I wanted to say that I really would hope that people in St. Paul would see this as an opportunity because of the narrowness of the margins of elected leaders, in that you have to work together. There's not an option. And I hope being optimistic will provide, reason for everyone to be optimistic, but we'll have to see how it plays out, I guess. And one last thing on the family leave, the paid family leave. It is really, whenever I hear that a department has added 400 jobs to help oversee a program that, from what I understand, a lot of employers and employees were already receiving some type of paid family leave, it just makes me wonder.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, as it should. One thing that you brought up right there was our elected officials, and some of them are working really hard for us. It's a thankless job, as we at this table know and can see. But at the same point, we need to get more individuals that are business pragmatic people in office. So one of the things that the Chamber has lifted up is a Center for Civic Engagement. So that led perfectly in, Rich, to that conversation. Kale, can you talk about that key initiative of the Center for Civic Engagement? And maybe just a little bit about what are we trying to, aiming to do with that program?
Yeah, for sure. Well, just recently, we stood up our Center for Civic Engagement at our annual meeting back in October. And this has been something that's been in discussion for quite a while. And it's just trying to figure out what is the right way to approach it. And through a lot of discussions with external stakeholders, internal stakeholders, we really rolled this out as a comprehensive approach to changing civic engagement, to changing the way societal trends are leaning towards civic engagement. We're seeing low voter turnout in primary elections in Cass County. We're seeing roughly, and this is off the top of my head, 15%. Well, there's a lot of things that are being voted on in the primary election that are consequential, like mayor, commissioners, school board, park board, whatever it may be, and you're only seeing 15% of the population turn out for that. So you're seeing that. You're seeing not enough people raising their hand to say, hey, I want to run for elected office. You're seeing people just overall disengage from politics because it's too divisive. Discussions are becoming more and more divisive. And we said we got to change this because in order for our community to succeed and be a vibrant region for economic growth and prosperity, we need to have a better dynamic when it comes to civic engagement. And so we stood up the Center for Civic Engagement. Really, the main purpose was to lean into the business community, but we said we got to do much more than that. We got to engage the entire community in this. And we've been doing some of this work, you know, onesie twosies before, but how do we do this in a comprehensive, systematic approach? And so we stood up this center to really change those societal trends to get more people to run for office. And in order to do that, I always say the individual has to ask themselves, their spouse, and their employer if they can run for office. And if one of those folks says no, guess what? They're probably not running for office. Well, we already have that well-established connection and relationship with the business community, so we can help answer that question with their employers and walk them through what it looks like to have an employee run for office, because there's a number of cases already out there. And then we can also help the individual get to yes by doing some mentorship and mentoring of those individuals, providing them the resources to help get them in the right mindset when it, you know, to make the decision to run for office, and then also bring that back to their spouse and in their household to really have that conversation of, is this the right choice for us? And so really trying to help get all three of those things to yes. So we're getting folks to raise their hand and say, I want to run for office. For instance, and it leans into it a little bit more, is in North Dakota, 1 in 45 individuals across the entire state have to run for some type of political office. There's just not enough people. In Minnesota, it's 1 in 241. And so if you think about all of your friend groups, all of your, you know, whatever you may have, acquaintances, how many of them are running for office? At some point, they're going to have to, and, you know, just given the trend of term limits, the disengaging of politics, all these different things. And so we're getting folks to stand up and run for office. The other component of it is you might have the best candidate run for office, but if only 15% shows up in the primary election, they might not ever get actually elected to that office. And so how are we pushing not only the business community, but the overall community to get more engaged and mobilized in those critical elections? Again, we're not going to tell people how to vote. This is a nonpartisan initiative. We're just simply saying, get out and vote. And helping provide those opportunities for education, for recruitment, all those types of things. And then also another big component of it that we're looking at is how are we getting young people engaged, because they are our next candidates. They are our next electorate. How are we getting them engaged K through 12, middle school, college, all those types of opportunities, because they are important. If we don't start this early, we're going to continue to see this decline. And what I continue to say, and this will be my last kind of comment, is the Center for Civic Engagement is really engaging folks across a wide spectrum of engagement in civics. You might be somebody that's never voted before. Well, in my opinion, if we're able to get somebody that's never voted before to show up and vote in a general election, we've won. If we're able to get somebody that's voted in every general election but's never voted in a primary election to actually do that, we've won. If we're able to move folks up on this political spectrum or this civic engagement spectrum, one rung up on that ladder, we are doing a fantastic job, because maybe that person that's never voted in 20 years, they're going to be the next candidate running for school board or city commission or whatever it may be. And so that's my mindset, is how do we move folks up that ladder of civic engagement?
That's a great mindset for it and a great initiative. Reach out if anybody's interested in it. Kale would love to share more information. One of those individuals that is raising their hand is Rich Slagle. So thank you for raising your hand. You're a business leader that has said, you know, raise your hand for that civic leadership yourself. Why do you think it's important for business leaders to consider serving in public office or other civic roles?
Well, I think it comes down to the thought that unless you're involved, you might not have a right to complain or offer insight. It's that person in the arena. I've had the chance in my life to serve on 6 councils and commissions. I was actually the president of a 700 and some home HOA, and there's a special place in heaven for anybody who serves on an HOA. But it was always just the idea that if people need some help, I would raise my hand. And so serving is not the goal. It is being a servant to the community or the people. And I have just been impressed with the chamber and its involvement with this center. And I honestly would say I would not be doing what I'm doing without that assistance and support.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for raising your hand time and time again to serve in those different capacities. And as Cale talked about, engagement looks different for everyone. John, you're someone that's showed up time and time again for advocacy. Why is it important for business leaders and really any individuals to show up for advocacy?
Well, it's pretty simple. The world belongs to those who show up. And it might not always feel like your time is well spent, but I think we started the conversation with it's hard to really understand the issue unless the people who are living the issue are there talking about it with our legislators. And moreover, even for folks like me that are frustrated, it's hard to dislike somebody that you spend any amount of time with. So even folks that might be on the opposite side of the issue, it's helpful for me to understand where are they coming from, what are they trying to get accomplished here. And so, again, I think that it's just been such a powerful opportunity for our organization and so well done by the Chamber to make sure that that time is well spent, that we're going to continue to do it going forward. And for those of you listening, what an opportunity. So put this time of year on your – I don't know if we have the dates for next year yet, but people should be thinking about it and joining us when that time is right. And you'll – I think we'll make some believers out of some folks that probably were like me, that before we started down this journey, were very jaded about how the political process works.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. After this last break we head to, we're going to talk a little bit more about engagement and opportunities that are upcoming, ones that you both have been a part of, like our DC fly-in, and other ways that people can get involved. So stick with us after this break. Welcome back to the Chamber Link. I'm Catherine Grinberg, Executive Vice President at the Chamber, and excited to have our conversation on public policy and advocacy today. I can't believe we're almost up to an hour here, but I wanted to end the conversation with further ways to engage for others that might be hearing about the Moorhead and Detroit Lakes Area Day at the Capitol and saying, you know, really wish I would have maybe known about that. Let's talk a little bit proactively about other ways to be engaged. One of the things that was brought up in the last segment is our Washington, D.C. fly-in, which has also become a staple of advocacy for our chamber. Cale, can you give us just an overview on what that event looks like, when it is, kind of the details?
Yeah, for sure. Very similar to our Moorhead Area Day at the Capitol, Moorhead Detroit Lakes Area Day at the Capitol, just elevated to the federal side of things, where we're able to bring business and community leaders out to St. Paul or out to Washington, D.C. to have those direct conversations with elected officials, secretaries, undersecretaries, elected officials, you know, appointed officials, whatever it may be. And it's a really great opportunity, again, to advocate for some of the priorities of the business community, but then also build those meaningful relationships amongst elected and appointed officials. And so that event is May 18th through the 20th. It's a great opportunity to get out in D.C. And make those relationships and advocate for priorities.
That's great. And both of you have attended this event, so you've got some personal experience, Rich and John, with it. Can either both of you share a little bit about your experience in D.C.? I know you'll both be heading back with us this May as well.
Yeah, I would offer up this. Again, relationships are just key to what I do, and I think key to McGough's success. And you think about last year, you're in a room with 30, 40, 50 leaders of various organizations, industries, higher ed, elected officials, et cetera. And to be able to, as John said, relationships being everything, develop those and get to know them, even if policies or views on certain things differ, it's absolutely essential. And so for me, just that event alone, that experience, I should say, is key. The fact that we're in D.C., where I spent a year working for a senator, is just even icing on the cake. And the last thing I'd say is not that, I mean, that means a lot to me, is I have multiple family members buried in Arlington. Mm-hmm. And so I get a chance to visit their graves when we're there. So.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I mean, and it'll be a beautiful time to be in D.C. in May. So it's a great opportunity, both the policy side of it, but also to enjoy our nation's capital as well, as you mentioned. John, how about you? You've been going for many years as well.
Well, much the same as Rich. And every year is a slightly different experience. You know, you'd think it'd be Groundhog's Day, but for instance, last year, and I think going into this year, our region is so well represented. We've got Secretary Burgum that, you know, always makes himself available. you know, any number of folks from the region that are in D.C. that are doing big things and are in key positions. And so it's just a rare opportunity for our region to be out there and be represented, unlike anything I've ever seen. And then I want to take this back to the, I get invited to any number of trade associations, different things to be out there. None have even compared to the organization and the access that the Chamber's trip has afforded me as the leader of Eventide. And so that opportunity, flanked with other great leaders from the community, has just been, frankly, a voice that we're not used to before the Chamber got involved with us.
Well, thank you. That's a very kind compliment. And I think to build on that of being involved and being out there, and the access that we get is in part, like you said, due to the fact that we bring such a great group out there. But also we've got a lot of elected officials from this region out there right now, appointed and elected, I should say. And so it's a great time to go out there and speak with those that are from our region. I think we talked about several of them that we're hoping to invite and sit down and kind of hear their perspective from North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota, whether they're, you know, serving in Congress or if they're in one of the departments. So it's an exciting time.
And we're not getting aides. We're getting them.
Yes.
And that's what's just such a change of pace from the previous D.C. trips I've attended, is the Chamber has that kind of connection to our electeds.
Yeah, I think that's the exclusive experience that we're able to provide in this opportunity is being able to pull those things together. But that panel that Catherine was just talking about is we have folks that are across so many different agencies and departments out Washington, D.C. that are from this region and understand this region, leaning into them and saying, hey, how can we be better? How can we do more out here? How can we be more successful in our priorities? And so we're really looking forward to being able to invite all of them to sit on a panel just to give us some insight and cover, again, a wide variety of topics, whether it's agriculture to healthcare and everything in between. Those folks are out there doing the work. So it's a great opportunity to be out there.
Great. So this is your formal invitation to join us for the D.C. fly-in that's coming up in May. Before we close out the show, I want to kind of go down the line with each of you and just get your opinion for listeners today that maybe aren't involved in our advocacy efforts or just advocacy in general. What advice you would give those business leaders about stepping into the arena themselves? Who wants to start?
I can start.
John,
I'll let Rich close on this one. And Rich is a perfect example. You have no, you said it earlier, you have no business complaining about it unless you're going to get involved with it. And so whatever that means to each of us, and some are willing to run in elected positions, whether it's HOAs or their city council or even state office or federal offices. And again, I think that's the high ground, is that, you know, you can talk about it or you can work on it. And so a credit to people who are stepping up and working outside of their comfort level to do this.
Well, thank you for not mentioning the Solid Waste Commission. that was a couple of years of interesting times. But I would say this. I prayed about it, right, when I was thinking about this. And you mentioned there were three constituencies that you needed to get approval. And I did get those. There was one that I thought about asking, and that would have been the dog. And I don't think that would have been a yes. She would not have been happy to hear what her owner was planning. But I would say this, is that the idea of getting involved, whether it's attending policy meetings, which we have once a month, attending some of the amazing events that the Chamber puts on, I would highly recommend that. And then the other thing is just continue to pray and get involved in trying to bring our country together. The idea that if I'm fortunate to be elected, that I can't go out to Bismarck and talk to some Democrats. I can tell you right now, I have three or four that are dear friends, and they're elected officials here. I will spend time with them and not even feel awkward about it, because we're all people, right? Trying to do the common good, marching to a due north compass.
That's awesome. Final word, Cale?
Yeah, I think, and John alluded to this as well, and this goes back, even our friend Kurt Zeller said it this last, at the day at the Capitol, is the government's going to do something to you or for you, and you decide what. And I think that's really hits home with the business community, is you can either let the government do something to you or for you. Again, whatever your political persuasion is, it doesn't matter. But those that are involved make decisions, and we need business leaders to be more involved. Again, we want to bring more folks to the table. I would love to be able to have our public policy committee so large that we can't barely host it in our community room at the Chamber or another office building in town. because that means that there's more folks getting engaged, or the struggles that we're having with these days at the Capitol. We're struggling to find space because our group is getting so large. That's a great opportunity. And so I just would encourage the business community to join our public policy committee, sign up for advocacy and action newsletters, just get engaged with the chamber, whether it's policy, workforce, or ribbon cuttings, or whatever it may be, just get involved.
Awesome. Well, Kale, John, Rich, thank you so much both for the conversation today, but also your engagement in policy, the process of it, supporting events like our last day at the Capitol that we just talked about. Really appreciate the conversation today and the engagement that you've had with our chamber. And thank you, everyone, for listening to the Chamber Link for such an exciting, fun episode about policy. Join us next time as we get to know this year's legacy leader, Marilyn Guy, and preview the awards event that's coming up in May. So have a great day. Thanks, everyone.